This is All In. I'm Miriam Sob. There are many companies in Indiana that have voluntarily chosen to require their employees get the COVID-19 vaccine. But there are ways for people to become exempt from that mandate, one way being through a religious exemption. Today, we'll find out how that process works, why some are concerned about people abusing the system, and how things might change in Indiana. We're joined now by Justin Hicks, Workforce Development Reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Justin, welcome back. What got your attention to cover this story?
Hey, Miriam. Yeah, so I've been watching this for kind of a while, actually, probably since maybe September or so. So back when President Biden first kind of announced that there would be some sort of OSHA-related vaccine, quote-unquote, mandate, and I'll say I use quote-unquote because, you know, there is the option to get tested as well, so it's mandate or test. But when that first started, I started looking into, okay, well, you know, what are kind of the parameters around vaccinations? And I was not the only one. So I started noticing on Facebook some groups in Indiana who were actually going on tour, going around the state and kind of doing these workshops with people all around the state who were, you know, kind of worried about their employer's vaccine policies. And they tried to, you know, they wanted to find ways to circumvent that. And one of the ways that was frequently brought up was religious exemptions. So I was covering this and kind of watching it for a little while, went to a couple of the rallies at the State House around vaccine mandates, and just been watching it. And then when this recent bill came up in the Indiana State Legislature that proposes to make some rules around mandates and around vaccination policies with employers, I thought that this was really the time to kind of hit this story hard and do something about it.
Is there any data right now on how many companies are mandating the vaccine and how many employees are asking for exemptions here in Indiana?
There's not a lot of data on this, no, because this is really a company-by-company policy at this point. This is not dictated by OSHA. Remember that the OSHA vaccine, quote-unquote, mandate has been blocked by the court for the time being. And in fact, all the other mandates, the one for federal contract workers and one for Medicare, Medicaid payments for healthcare workers, all this has been blocked. So right now, if you do have a vaccine policy at your work, that is totally voluntary. That is your company's decision. And, you know, we don't really have a lot of data. We don't have a lot of there's no good clearinghouse that I know of, per se, that has a definitive source that says here's how many companies have this policy and here's how many don't. So,
mm-hmm. Well, just to clarify, because you mentioned that it's a voluntary thing for companies. So this is on a case-by-case basis that a company will decide that they want their employees to show proof of vaccination.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so this would be a company's voluntary decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does this religious exemption process work right now? What do employees do if they want to ask for it?
Yeah, so it's different in different places. In some places, you may be asked to fill out a couple pages of questions that say, you know, what exactly about this vaccination policy is it that that interferes with your religion? You know, give us a couple sentences of explanation. You know, and it could be a couple pages of questions to maybe even just, hey, you know, come into my office for maybe 5 minutes, let's talk about this. Or it could just be, you know, some companies may have a policy too that if it gets requested, you kind of just nod and you say, okay, and you follow that. So, I mean, it's really a company-by-company policy basis. As I'm sure we'll hear later on in the program, though, you know, you want to stick to whatever policy you have. You want to make sure that you stick to that same policy because otherwise you could get into a little bit of legal trouble if you start changing your policy for COVID vaccinations versus other vaccinations.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm curious how it just seems like a lot of stuff around COVID seems so new and different when there have been vaccine mandates or other types of things from the past that I don't know if there's been much backlash for, or maybe there has been. But
yeah,
are there?
It's definitely been politicized. I mean, at this point, it is a scientific process, right? That has been politicized for better or worse. So.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back a show that we did a while back about just the history of these things. And it seems like every time a new vaccine comes out, there seems to be this cyclical nature where there's a lot of pushback and then people people forget and move on. But are there other reasons workers can ask to be exempt from a vaccine mandate aside from religious belief?
Yeah. And so, again, this varies company to company, but typically a lot of companies also have medical exemptions as well. And those are a lot more, I don't want to say clear cut, but they're a lot easier to quote unquote prove maybe than a religious belief because, you know, you literally go to your doctor and your doctor can sign a form that says, you know, this person's immunocompromised. This person has some kind of other condition. You know, there is sort of that paper trail, but medical exemptions I think are offered at most places. I believe some places, because this is a company by company policy as well, some companies may, you know, be encouraging vaccinations, but they may also have ways to say, if this is really going to be a sticking point, we may offer some accommodations based upon, you know, a belief of conscience, not necessarily a belief of religion, but a belief of conscience. If you feel like it's not right for you, you can opt out. So again, every company has its own policy. It really varies. It runs the gamut from, you know, you must get vaccinated to we would really like for you to get vaccinated.
But ultimately, isn't it that whether someone gets a religious exemption or not, they're still going to have to test, right? For COVID, at least?
Perhaps. I mean, again, it's the company's policy. In the OSHA mandate, which again is being blocked by the courts, it seems like there would be some sort of testing for people with religious exemptions. But again, currently, because this is company by company policy, there probably is not going to be testing if you get an exemption.
Oh, that's really interesting, because that kind of throws a wrench in things a little bit.
Well, I mean, if you're a company, you can think about this too. I mean, if you're a company, you don't necessarily want to have this swath of people who then you have to be breathing down their necks to make sure they get tested every so often. You know what I mean? It's when you consider these are all voluntary policies. It makes a lot more sense to think about, you know, they're not mandating testing. And some places may do that, but it's not like a legal requirement or anything.
Are you hearing any sort of detailed reasons why people ask for a religious exemption? Are there common arguments that you hear?
Yeah, I mean, I think the arguments are what we've heard from people for months now who say they don't want to get vaccinated. You know, it's things like, you know, it's too early. I want to see what's happening with other people who get vaccinated, or I just feel like this isn't right for my body. You know, it runs the gamut again from people who just maybe don't feel comfortable for personal reasons to maybe people who have gotten a lot of disinformation about, you know, microchips and vaccines or things like that seem a little bit out there. You know, it really runs the gamut. Those are the kind of things that they're hearing when people are requesting for accommodations, I would imagine, you know, people just saying that I don't think this is right for me.
You talked to a pastor in Noblesville who said he's getting messages from people about this. What are they telling him?
Yeah. So this is Micah Beckwith. He's a pastor in Noblesville, and, he ran for the U.S. House, about a year or two ago, I think. So, I mean, he's pretty openly, you know, out there as a conservative. You know, he told me that people call him very, very frequently and just say, I'm really scared. My company is telling me to do this thing. I don't really know how to get out of it. I know that this is not right for me. You know, they have very deeply held beliefs that this is not right for them. And they may not necessarily be able to say, you know, quote the scripture or be able to say, you know, this deity told me that it was not right for me, but, you know, just a deeply held belief that they have personally. And so Micah will help them and kind of talk through this with them and kind of help them with some of the, you know, scriptures that they might be able to use if they're Christian from the Bible, you know, or maybe other justifications that are very neatly linked to biblical scriptures. So yeah, I mean, he's really hearing from people who just aren't comfortable and they're very deeply feel uncomfortable about this. And he's kind of helping them see that in a religious light.
Do we know how many times someone's request for exemption has been denied? Is it common here in Indiana?
So we don't know. And again, because it's a company by company policy, it's really hard to tell. I mean, looking at some previous reporting that I have seen, I know one of our colleagues at Indiana University, Brock Turner, has reported that over there, they say maybe about 1 in 12 in the IU health workforce there received religious accommodations. So, I mean, that's relatively significant. And on the other hand, we know that there are some companies as well that have not granted a lot of religious accommodations. One of them that keeps coming up and that we heard about in the legislative hearings and session a week or two ago was Extension Health. We know a lot of their employees have said they requested accommodations and did not receive them. So, you know, it can run the gamut. It can be, you know, some companies may have a lot of exemptions and they may grant them pretty widely, and other companies may look at it very, very closely.
I wonder also, when it comes to religious exemptions, what religious leaders in the community would be okay signing off on, and are there some, I guess, disagreements, like, you know, if you come to somebody and say, can you sign this for me? I need a religious exemption. They're like, nope, I'm not going to do that. You're going to get the vaccine. Have you heard of that at all?
Not necessarily. And I should say, too, that people don't need to have you don't need to have somebody kind of sign on to say, I vouch for this person. Right. So it's not required. I think people like to have that kind of support. I think it's just a human thing. Right. You know, when you're going to request an accommodation, you want to have kind of that backup behind you. So you're not alone. And I think, you know, going to your local, you know, pastor or, you know, whatever the religious leader you want to go to is and asking for their help. That, you know, I think that's just a human comfort thing. It's not a requirement, though. For the most part, you know, anyone can just walk up to their employer and say, you know, I don't believe that this is, you know, right for me, and I'm going to request a religious accommodation. That could suffice in some cases, you know, to serve as your religious exemption request. Again, at some companies, though, they may have paperwork for you to fill out, and they have more of a documented process. But you don't need someone to sign on in your favor. To that point, though, I will say a lot of religious leaders from a lot of the major religions around the world, you know, and when I say major, it's just being sort of the largest documented religions, you know, so a lot of Christian leaders, a lot of Muslim leaders, other religions as well, they've said, we support vaccination. So if you're going from all the way from the top to down kind of thing, there does seem to be support from religions to vaccinate. But of course, religion is a personal thing, and that is each individual person can have their own spin on those beliefs.
Well, thank you so much. Justin Hicks is the Workforce Development Reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking about the process of getting a religious exemption from the COVID-19 vaccine from your employer, how it works, why it's a tough thing to make rules about, and how a newly proposed bill in Indiana might change things. With us now is Chris Schrader, Government Affairs Director for the Indiana Society of Human Resource Management. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We talked about it a little in the first segment, but can you explain what this newly proposed bill is that relates to religious exemptions in Indiana, and what does its current form say?
So the current bill states that basically lays out if you are an employer who chooses to have a vaccine mandate, then you can. Under the following conditions. So it sets a whole series of conditions that you have to satisfy, right? If this law passes, then if you're an employer, you have to do it that way. So it provides for a whole series of exemptions, right? So there's exemption, obviously, obviously if you're vaccinated, that goes without saying, but there's also a medical exemption, religious exemption, an exemption if you can document that you had COVID before, and therefore there's an assumption within that law that says you've got some degree of natural immunity, right? And those are the basic ones, right there. So when you add it all up, you could easily see a scenario in which you may have a vaccine mandate, but one that a lot of people would have the opportunity to opt out of. That's, and also keep in mind that probably if you're working, certainly if you're working from home and don't come into the office, you're not going to be subject to that, right?
With what's being proposed in this bill, were you surprised at all, or were you expecting this?
A little bit, in the sense that when it comes to the things involving especially medical exemption, religious exemption, the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, that acts as the enforcement agency of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, has already given guidance on this, right? So if you're an employer in the state and you're subject to the Civil Rights Act, and most employers are, right, it goes down to a very, very low level, then that's the government agency you pay attention to, right? Because they're the ones that give the guidance on it. And the guidance that they had out on the medical and the religion, they've had out for a while. And so our concern from an HR perspective is that, given that we've been dealing with this for some time and have this whole accommodation process down, right? Because there's an accommodation process that you follow, a due process, if you will, that protects both the employer and the employee. And so our concern from an HR standpoint is they're not explicitly recognizing that Title VII is there and the Americans with Disabilities Act is there. And those are both federal acts that most employers can't get around, right, if they're covered by it. And again, those both go down to very small sizes of employers. So one level of concern there. And then the next one is that the way that it's set up, there's really no interactive process. Once the employee produces documentation, you're just done. And as the employer, you just have to say, oh, pretty much okay. And that's not the way the normal accommodation process works, right? There's a back and forth and there's a discussion, and the employer actually makes a determination as to how they can make the accommodation, to what degree they can make the accommodation, ranging from, you know, we can do all of it to, I'm sorry, we can't do any of it.
So would it be fair to say that this new bill that's being proposed would basically require employers to accept religious exemptions or any other type of exemption without question?
The way that it's written up, as long as the employee is able to make that statement, and this, if you look at the act, if you look at how they've got the legislation built, they pretty much are following the steps laid out by the EEOC in terms of how a person substantiates is the wrong word, makes a statement, right? Makes a statement to that effect. So they pretty much follow that part, right? But what's missing from our perspective is the next piece as to whether or not we can support that, right? Because the way we look at it under HR, and the EEOC is very clear about this, there aren't real blanket policies per se. Every individual's request is supposed to be taken on its own merits individually. Right. So you make an accommodation for one person under certain circumstances. You may not make an accommodation for another person. Right. Under certain standards. So it's always a case by case basis. And this one here, just based the way this act is written, you give your documentation and you're done. And the employer just has to accept it. That's not the way that's not the way it works, you know, in our world for anything else. And again, this is. EEOC has already given guidance on this. As a matter of fact, we've actually been doing this all along, right? I mean, there were some organizations that came out with vaccine mandates early, right? So process I laid out to you, we've actually been doing.
It sounds like, I mean, if the employer just grants to whoever submits documentation, it would be less of a possibility that they might not approve something that should be approved and have problems arise.
Possibly, right? Possibly. But again, the way this is laid out, there's supposed to be a back and forth between the employee and the employer, right? The employee states what they want, the accommodation that they want. The employer, you're trying to figure out whether or not you can accommodate that. And let's face it, we work real hard to accommodate most of what an employee wants. Right. You want an employee to be productive. You want them to be effective. You do everything you can to make things work. Just understanding that sometimes that just won't pan out. Our whole point is, would most people get religious exemptions if they followed the process and the guidance laid out by the EEOC? And my expectation is, yes, they would. They probably would. But there would be some instances in which they may not. And just knocking the employer and the HR folks out of the way and saying, no, you don't even get to make that distinction where you might say we're not granting it. That's the part that that to us is a deal breaker. You're just telling the employer you can't even take that into consideration.
Does that set precedent for future things? Are you worried at all? Like if this is something that passes?
I'm not so much worried about the precedent on that per se. The challenge with the vaccine mandates here is that you've got political overtones wrapped into a medical issue, and now you're and just to make the difficulty range here all the way up to ramp it up to 100, right? You bring in religion. Which is for people who are religious, people who are faith, this is no small and trifle matter at all, right? It appears in both the First Amendment to the Constitution as a negative, right? And how it gets into the workplace here is through Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, where it's protected as a positive right. So it is a tough issue to manage under normal circumstances without these other factors at play, right? So it's I can only imagine a nightmare this would be for employers who don't have HR departments, because the way this law is written, this would apply to employers who have one or more employees. I mean, that's just everybody, just about, right? Except for sole proprietors.
Right, right. I'm just thinking here, wrapping my head around this. Have you seen the bill change at all since you first saw and heard about it?
Well, so they had there was what I really call a concept paper, or more than anything, it wasn't even a bill, that they had a 1-day special session on, and our concerns were voiced there, and I was hoping to see some amelioration, at least recognition of Title VII and ADA. Being in the house, so to speak, and that didn't materially change, which is why we are taking an opposed position on the bill, and I'll be testifying on Thursday to that effect.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're planning to testify?
Well, basically, it's what I just said here. You've got an employer mandate. First of all, this is an employer mandate, right? So it's saying the employer is, okay, you have the right to do this, but you have to do it this particular in this specific way. So in our professional society, we take an opposed position on employer mandates. As a matter of fact, in the last session, there were two bills, one bill to mandate vaccinations and another bill that said employers couldn't. And we opposed both. That's our point. We're not against, as a matter of fact, our position is, employers should be free to choose whether they want to have vaccine, mandatory vaccine policies or not. And I would never gainsay an employer who said we don't want one from one that said they did. You have to know your employees. You have to know your customers. You have to know your marketplace. These are complex decisions under normal situations. And for the legislature to wander into the middle of that and then try to impose a specific set of rules that makes it 10 times harder, of course we're going to oppose. It was already hard enough. And they still haven't recognized Title VII and ADA as sitting there and having a voice, if you will, in this matter. And those are both federal laws that the employer cannot avoid, right? So those are the reasons we're going to oppose, flat out.
And just to clarify, Chris, for our listeners, when you talk about we, you're representing the Indiana.
HR Indiana SHRM, right. So SHRM stands for Society of Human Resource Management. That's the largest HR professional membership organization in the nation. HR Indiana SHRM is the state organization. Below that, we have 14 chapters in the state with about 3,000 professional members. So it's my role as Director of Government Affairs to represent their interests before both state and federal legislative bodies and agencies.
Do you think if the pandemic didn't happen, a bill like this would have even been brought up?
Pandemic didn't happen. Well, if pandemic didn't happen, the EEOC probably would have had a problem with mandatory vaccines. Right. So this whole thing has been strange. COVID has been strange, to say the least. From top to bottom, Department of Labor, OSHA, and EEOC all surprised me in terms of how they reacted to this against the backdrop of their history. So clearly we're in uncharted territory. Our job is just to navigate it at this point.
Yeah. Well, do you think right now this bill would pass through the State House as is, or do you think some more changes are coming?
Yes, I expect it to pass in one form or another, largely because it carries. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I just got a notice that said my internet connection is unstable. Okay, sorry about that. so the bill carries a number of 1,001. So the way the Republican caucus numbers their bills, the first 10 bills in the House, first 10 bills in the Senate, and there are going to be a lot of mirrors, meaning the bills are identical, are the top priorities of the Republican caucus for that assembly, right, for that session. And my observation has been working the State House for 20 odd years now. The Republican caucus in its current power structure pretty much gets what it wants, right, in terms of its legislative priorities. So I would be very surprised if this bill doesn't pass. I mean, certainly it passes out of committee. Half of the committee members in employment, labor, and pensions are co-sponsors on the bill, including the committee chair, which is pretty rare. Committee chairs usually don't sponsor bills that are going to come before their committee. So the fact that Representative Van Adder is on the bill tells me that the caucus is firmly behind this. And yes, for those reasons, to pass, whether it's modified to our requested liking or not.
Well, we have a listener question from Jeremy. I know we only have a few minutes left here. Jeremy on Facebook asks, can you please comment on the difference in policies between religious exemptions for vaccines and other similar mandates? What is required for religious exemptions from the draft or selective service? I suspect the requirements for the second are far higher.
Well, again, the selective service one went all the way to the Supreme Court. So they're not really comparable. I can say this. I can tell you the standard that the EEOC has set. So I can tell you the guidance they've given to us. So what they've set, what the EEOC has given in terms of guidance, is that it is the employer's responsibility to determine whether or not the religious accommodation or the religious belief is, in their words, quote, sincerely held. And so they've said the employer may inquire as to the sincerity, but they've also said inquiry does not mean inquisition. Those are the exact words of Commissioner Jocelyn Sambles. So they're telling you to tread darn lightly there, right? That's what that means. They also said the employee's written request doesn't need to be artful or erudite, nor use any particular special words, and that we are to appreciate that this may be the first time in the individual's life that they are actually having to explain this to anyone who isn't of their faith or in their particular belief system. And we are to assume that unless they basically blatantly call out that they're making a social statement or a political statement, that is indeed sincerely held. And then you move on to the next phase. And this is why, and I've polled HR professionals on this unscientifically. When I say polled, I mean ask, you know, show of hands, send me an email sort of thing. I couldn't find a single person saying they had denied a request. So again, it's not that the requests won't be approved. I expect a very, very high percentage of them to be approved, just like IU did, right? I was unsurprised by that number. What you can't do is tell the employer that they have no place in that and that they can't make a determination.
So you've got to still give the employer a choice.
Due process. There's got to be a due process.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for giving us all that information. It's a lot to consider and I guess we'll be keeping an eye on this bill. Chris Schrader is the Government Affairs Director for the Indiana Society of Human Resource Management. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about the rules around religious exemptions from the vaccine and how that process might be changing in Indiana. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We're discussing religious exemptions from vaccines, how that process might change in Indiana, and why it's a tricky issue for employers, courts, and lawmakers to handle. We're joined now by Daniel Konkol, professor of law emeritus and adjunct professor of religious studies at the Indiana University Moore School of Law. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Hi, Mariam. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Daniel, we've been talking about religious exemptions specifically for the COVID-19 vaccine, but I'm hoping to broaden the conversation a little bit more. What kinds of legal issues might come up after someone makes a religious exemption claim?
Well, that's a very broad question. I mean, basically, religious exemption claims exist in the law, have existed in the law way back to the colonial period. The previous segment asked a question about conscientious objection to serving the military. There were colonial exemptions for that. There were colonial exemptions for giving oaths, for example, that some religious believers objected to. There have been religious exemptions throughout history. You also have to distinguish between religious exemption claims that are made against the government, which are adjudicated and resolved under the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, and more recently under various religious liberty statutes like the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana, the State Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So you have claims against the government that are subject to one set of standards. Then, as Chris mentioned in the previous segment, you have layered on top of that, you have some religious exemption legal regimes that are established that apply to private entities, in particular private employers, notably in the current context, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which authorizes basically reasonable accommodation in favor of religious employees whose work requirements otherwise would impair their religious practice, such as dress code requirements, for example, scheduling requirements that might impair their ability to practice their faith or attend to religious observances. A variety of different things might come up in that context. So basically, you know, religious exemptions as a general proposition it's an enormous and complicated topic.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on in different areas, and perhaps we're only becoming more aware of this religious exemption because of what's happening with COVID.
COVID certainly has played a prominent role. I mean, among other things, in the earlier stages of the pandemic, there was a great deal of litigation that was brought challenging various types of restrictions on attendance, for example, various gubernatorial executive orders that were put into place, lockdowns of various kinds, basically with religious congregations claiming that they ought to be exempted from those rules. In that case, those claims were based typically under the First Amendment on the ground that the government was improperly failing to give religious freedom the effect it ought to have. So certainly COVID has played a prominent role in sort of making these issues more prominent, although frankly, they've been pretty prominent in recent years anyway. A lot of the issues relate to, you know, same-sex marriage. You've had prominent cases involving religiously conservative wedding vendors objecting to the provision of goods or services to same-sex couples or for same-sex weddings. So it's been a somewhat hot topic even prior to COVID, but COVID certainly makes it even more so. And I think as Chris Schrader mentioned in the last segment, I mean, the politicization of COVID, combining it with religious aspects as well, certainly highlights some of the controversy.
It's interesting that the cases that you mentioned also that brought on religious exemptions. It makes me wonder, are there common situations where you see religious exemptions or claims being made, let's say even before the pandemic?
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, you know, historically, religious exemption claims were made mainly by religious minorities as opposed to sort of mainstream Christians or evangelical Christians. So basically, you have prominent cases reaching the Supreme Court of the United States, for example, involving a claim by Amish, Old Order Amish families who, that wanted to be exempted from compulsory school attendance for high school on the ground that this interfered with their understanding of sort of avoiding worldly affairs and worldly matters. Claims by Saturday worshipers to be you know, exempted from work requirements that would otherwise have required them to work on Saturday. So there are a lot of claims. There are claims more recently than that, successful claims in the Supreme Court on behalf, for example, of a Muslim prisoner who wished to wear a beard contrary to prison dress code requirements in compliance with his religious faith. Supreme Court accepted that claim. So again, there are religious exemption claims made in a variety of settings, but I think the COVID vaccine requirement in particular has triggered sort of an enormous number of religious exemption claims in a manner that I think could be said to be unprecedented.
If you're listening live, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Daniel Konkle, Professor of Law Emeritus and Adjunct Professor of Religious Studies at the Indiana University Moorer School of Law. We have a listener voicemail from Jeremy who has a comment about getting a religious exemption without providing a history of religious objection. Let's take a listen.
Hi, this is Jeremy from Indianapolis. I've, as a Quaker and a son of conscientious objectors, I find the idea that people can say, I don't feel this is right, but not be able to express their reasons and show a history of having a religious and or ethical objection to this, rather offensive, because the requirements for getting a religious exemption to the draft are quite high. Thank you.
That's a great question. And actually, historically, in the context specifically of conscientious objection to military service, the legal rules were, in fact, consistent with what your comment indicates. Basically, you had to be a member of, in essence, a pacifist religious denomination. Over time, the Supreme Court and ultimately Congress, for better or for worse, has essentially taken the idea of religious belief and converted it into a highly individualistic concept, so that under current legal doctrine, constitutional, Title VII, conscientious objection, you name it, in essence, it is for the individual to decide for himself or herself what his or her religion requires. It's highly individualized. To take an example that came actually from our state, Indiana, a case decided by the Supreme Court back in 1981 involved a Jehovah's Witness whose name was Eddie Thomas, who objected to working on the production of basically making steel sheet in his foundry that could be converted into military products. And he couldn't claim that Jehovah's Witnesses generally would regard that as too closely connected to military activity to be sufficiently closely connected to be objectionable. But the Supreme Court said, well, that's for Eddie Thomas to decide. It's for him to decide what his religion requires. And likewise, in other cases, the Supreme Court has suggested that folks can change their religious belief. And maybe they were not a strict Sabbath observer last week, but they have further clarified their thinking and they have become a strict Sabbath observer. And the Supreme Court has basically said they get to decide what their particular religion entails. So basically, the idea of what constitutes a religious belief is largely in the hands of the person making the claim. Religious sincerity is a separate matter, and it is, in fact, something that the recipient of the exemption request is permitted to inquire into. That's one of the issues raised by the Indiana legislation in the vaccine mandate context. But basically, religious sincerity can be required. In other words, you have to truly believe, in theory, that you have a religious belief that in fact entails a certain proposition, such as I cannot get vaccinated. My religion tells me it has to be your religion that's telling you that, and you have to sincerely believe that to be so. The problem is it's exceedingly difficult to question someone's sincerity, and that's what gives rise to the response of most employers in particular, to basically tread lightly. The EEOC says to tread lightly on that issue of sincerity. But at least in theory, that is something that could be questioned. Past history of an exemption claimant would be relevant to that. But it's very difficult and tricky to inquire into it.
Well, you're mentioning the Supreme Court basically left things sort of up to individuals to decide, I guess, the religiosity and stuff like that, and what works for them and what doesn't. Does that translate to other types of things within the Supreme Court? I mean, maybe I'm going a little off topic here, but I'm just thinking about health care decisions. Can that not be left up to the individual, similar to religious exemptions?
Well, no, I think that basically the idea of the Supreme Court's doctrine with respect to religion is the idea that it is not for the government and not even for the courts to adjudicate what counts as an appropriate religious belief. In other words, the government should not decide what counts as a proper understanding of a religious faith. That is something left to the private sector and to individuals. So I don't think it translates.
Well, Indiana made headlines years ago with RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. How did that relate to what we're talking about now?
Well, it doesn't relate a whole lot because we're talking mainly about a mandate or legislation that would go after the rules and regulations of private employers. So the Indiana RFRA was an attempt and is an attempt, it's still in effect, to basically adjust the rules when the government imposes a burden. So, for example, the Indiana University vaccine mandate, since Indiana University is a state university, it is subject to RFRA, and if Indiana University declined to give exemptions based on religion, it could be subjected to a RFRA claim. Conversely, the private employers are not subject to RFRA. Private employers are subject or would be subject to the Indiana legislation that is being considered, but RFRA would not have any bearing on that particular question.
Do you think religious groups have as much political power as they used to in this country?
Well, in some ways, they have more political power. I mean, I think you have the intersection of religion and politics tends to, in fact, or at least arguably, enhance the political power of groups, especially those on the conservative side of the scale that could be partially at work with respect to the Indiana legislation. And by the way, as our segment is starting to come to the end, one point I want to be sure to make about the Indiana legislation, if I may, and that is that to the extent that the Indiana legislation is enacted with the current language in which an employee has, in essence, an absolute right to assert a religious exemption with no consideration given whatever to the employer, that would raise a significant issue under the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment based upon a decision by the Supreme Court in a case called Estate of Thornton versus Caldor. decided back in 1984. It was an 8-1 decision at the time. The Supreme Court has changed over the years, so it may or may not be fully adhered to. But in essence, what the Supreme Court said there in response to a Massachusetts law that the state of Massachusetts could not require private employers categorically to give employees the day off on the employee's declared Sabbath day. In other words, it's one thing, as Title VII says, to require reasonable accommodation of an employee's objection to a work requirement, or in this case, a vaccine requirement. It's something else to give complete and absolute preference to the religious employee. So if the Indiana law is enacted as drafted, I would suggest that it would at least raise a significant issue under the Establishment Clause, under that 1984 precedent. Whether anyone would litigate it, obviously, would be a separate question.
If it passes, could this be abused by, I mean, hopefully people would not want to take advantage, but let's say someone does want to take advantage and says, you know what, I'm just going to tell you I have a religious exemption. I can't come to work in person, and I just want to work from home.
Well, I think the potential for abuse is to my mind, obvious. I mean, and the problem is, from a broader perspective, is that, to my mind, the religious accommodation, including exemptions in appropriate settings, is part and parcel what religious freedom should mean in this country and has meant for the entire history of this country, again, back to colonial times. To the extent that religious exemptions are, in fact, abused, even if it cannot be ferreted out, even if you cannot fully test sincerity, for example, but you suspect, or a lot of people suspect, that claims are being asserted without adequate, truly religious justification, in essence, I think that casts a bad light potentially on religious freedom and may, in fact, in the long run, impair the viability of religious freedom to the extent that members of society begin to suspect that religious freedom really doesn't warrant exemptions because, in fact, of that potential for abuse.
Daniel Konkle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Daniel Konkle is a professor of law emeritus and an adjunct professor of religious studies at the Indiana University Moore School of Law. Thanks to you and all of our guests for coming on today. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.